The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Afternoon, we've made it to Friday. The weekend is pretty much here. We thank you for being with us on the program. And there has been a lot happening this week. Most of the news on this program coming from Knoxville, Tennessee. Monday, we told you about Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer. Yesterday, the news about the new athletic director. And today, he was introduced, Danny White, on old Rocky Top. Had a press conference just a few minutes ago. And so far, the reviews have been quite good. Thank you.
If everything was humming here and going great, I wouldn't be standing here. It wouldn't be an attractive proposition for me. I was really proud and excited about what we were building kind of from the ground up at UCF. And this isn't a ground up because it's been there. But there's a lot of building that needs to happen. So the challenges in terms of the NCAA investigation and the challenges in terms of not being where we want to be competitively in football, that excites me. That energizes me. And I want to be a part of fixing it and a part of building it. And
Danny White in Knoxville. Meanwhile, there is other news, and we will share that with you. Alabama getting ready to finish putting its staff together. And the big name is Bill O'Brien. Yes. Why does that name seem familiar? Because he was the replacement at Penn State for Joe Paterno. Did a great job there. He's also been the head coach of the Texans, and he is now officially Nick Saban's offensive coordinator. There's been a lot of changes on the Alabama staff in recent years. Coordinators have come and gone, but the winning continues. Daboll to O'Brien, both from the, of course, the NFL. Jeremy Pruitt to Pete Golding, the offensive line. Doug Marrone. He's a familiar name from the NFL, former head coach. A lot of other names as well. That's 217 to 221. A lot of changes, to say the least. Meanwhile, at Mizzou, the highly regarded Steve Wilks, former NFL coach, named defensive coordinator. Great reputation. Another important step as Coach Drink tries to move that program up even more. A lot of NFL guys arriving in the SEC. A lot of praise for Cohn at Kentucky, Munkin at Georgia, Peets, LSU, Satterfield, Minter at Vandy, Brad White, Kentucky, and of course, we just mentioned Wilks to Missouri. One player causing a lot of problems in college football. NCAA has now slammed Florida, Texas A&M, and Notre Dame all over the same recruit. And guess what? None of them got him. Hardly worth the effort. All three will recover, I can assure you. Meanwhile, Larry Scott, thank you, but no thank you. The highest paid commissioner in big time sports at more than $5 million a year. Most of it down the drain as he has been pushed out as the Pac-12 commissioner. The search is on. And finally, no matter whether you're a geezer or a little kid, you undoubtedly have heard about Henry Aaron, one of the greatest baseball players of all time. Born in Mobile, Alabama, grew up in the segregated South, and went on to claim the most vaunted record in sports, breaking Babe Ruth's all-time home run record in April of 1974, Henry Aaron passing away earlier today. And we will talk about all that on this Friday afternoon program, and we appreciate you being here, and a number of guests will be dropping by, some important ones to say the least. We'll talk to the new Auburn head coach, the Vandy AD, Ross Dellinger on changes everywhere. And Bill Walton I mean, come on. Bill Walton drops by. We'll compare the dynasty that he was a big part of under John Wooden to what Nick Saban is doing. We'll also get some thoughts from Bill on the upcoming, well, not the upcoming, but the current college basketball season. Let's get some phone calls going here, and we begin with Roger in New Orleans. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Mr. Paul, thank you for having me on. How have you been, sir?
Roger, I am great. It's always wonderful to hear your voice. How are you?
And, you know, I don't call often, but I listen often. And I did want to ask you something. I know you can't devolve over the air. I am here to, since I'm from Alabama originally, although I live in New Orleans, I actually saw me and my brother before my brother went to Vietnam. We would go over some weekends when he was away from basic training because we wouldn't see each other for a year and got to see Clemente and Aaron play. And you and I both know that baseball is no longer America's pastime. America's pastime is now the NFL. But I do want to share this story, and maybe some younger listeners are listening. And with the stuff that this country has gone through for the last year or so, and some of it may have been building up for years, and I'm not taking a side one way or another, but there was a famous Dick Schaap interview with Henry Aaron, and in it, Dick Schaap, a way better interviewer than I hate to tell you, you or I would ever be, said, you know, all the hate mail and all that and the death threats. And he said, well, and so Schaap said, well, what do you do, burn them all and all that? And I said, and Henry Aaron said, no, I keep the best ones, which he meant to be the worst ones, the most incendiary ones, in a box up in the attic. And once in a while, he'd go up there and shuffle through them and read through them. And so Dick Schaap says, well, why do you do that? Are you still angry at those people? And he said, no, I was trying to pray for them and feel sorry for them for doing that. And the Dodgers organization, because the home run number 715 came in Atlanta.
Right.
And it was the Dodgers at the Braves. And Al Downing, the relief pitcher who threw home run 17, also started getting hate mail. I don't know if that says good things or bad things about where our country is right now. But we're in a unique place, and I'm sure that Henry Aaron, where he is now, he's praying for us. He really is. Take care, Paul.
Roger,
and
thank
I'm
you.
Sorry,
yeah.
I got a little sentimental.
No, no, great to have you on.
I know you'll forgive me.
Always great to hear from you. And the great story about Henry, and I believe he was 13 years old when the Dodgers came through Mobile, and he was able to see Jackie Robinson for the first time, and that helped inspire him to think he had a chance to make it, because his dad had told him, you're not going to play in the major leagues. That just doesn't happen. And he went on to become literally one of the greatest players of all time. And there's not even, you can argue the order of the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but you can't argue whether Hank Aaron is in that category. He is. Let's continue with more calls. And Mike is in Georgia. And Mike, you are on the air. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Paul, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to pay a quick tribute also to Henry Aaron. I was the real home run king, the true home run king. And I was fortunate enough to go to the Super Bowl in 1989 when San Francisco played the Bengals. And as we were getting ready to go into the stadium, we were walking around in the stadium, my friend taps me on the back, and he goes, look, it's the king. And I looked over, and like just standing 10 feet away from us was Henry Aaron. And we went up and quickly, you know, got to say hello to him and everything. And he was so gracious, and he was, you know, was just so kind. And then the last thing I'll add, I don't know how true this is, but I don't know that it's not true. I was reading today that he signed with the Braves in 1957, instead of the Giants in 1957 because the Braves offered him $50 more a month.
Very possible. That's true. Thanks for the call. Really do appreciate it. And Stacy is in Virginia. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Yes, you have a great show.
Thank you very much.
I want to say that I respect what you did on Monday about MLK honoring him on certain shows. He was blown through. They mentioned this is MLK Day. Then he went on to, you know, another subject. I'm glad you did that.
Well, let me say this, Stacy. When I was growing up, I think I was 12 years old when Dr. King was killed, not that far from where I lived, about 10 miles away. It had a profound effect on me as a young person. I was a student of history. I had his, even before he was killed, my father had bought me a record of his I Have a Dream speech. It's something that affects me even today, half a century later. And I think it's important to remember him. People can quibble about history, but you can't quibble about the effect that he had on almost everyone that has lived since him.
Thank you, sir. You have a great show.
Thank you. You be well, and you take care of yourself. Same
All
for,
right.
And it's very similar for Hank Aaron. Grew up, one in Atlanta, one in Mobile, Alabama, two very segregated, difficult, dangerous places at that time. We will take a break. More to come as we continue. Many more guests. We have a lot to do today, and we hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And hey, welcome back. Great to have you here on a Friday afternoon in Hugh in Deep Gap, North Carolina. Hello, Hugh.
Hello, Paul. I've been listening to your show since you first went with the SEC Network on TV. My two favorite shows were the first one you did with Coach Stallings and one you had yesterday with Coach Oates. My goodness, is that man something to behold. He's a master at chess, and he's playing a bunch of people trying to figure out checkers.
Yeah, you're right.
I am so impressed with his approach to basketball, but there's a couple of things you got to remember. One of the key elements he talked about is taking over a team that had five seniors. And when he brought that team to Lexington to play Kentucky, Kentucky had four kids that were freshmen that were high schoolers last year. There's a world of difference in the physical, mental, and fundamental skill development of a high schooler in his first experience in college ball, and somebody's been at it 4 years. For this reason, I would love to see big-time college basketball and football go back to freshman teams and not provide the bright lights of network television and all of that that goes with that until they've spent a year learning how to be a student, living away from home, good nourishment, good fundamental development, and physical training. I know that's not a popular opinion, but it's mine. And I think when you consider the fact that North Carolina, Duke, and Kentucky for the first time since John Kennedy was president are out of the top 25, it's really an end product of a very foolish program that John Calipari has tried to sell the world on, which is the one-and-done concept. I think it's the worst thing ever happened to basketball. Thanks for the time, Paul.
Thank you, Hugh. I do appreciate it very much. Zach is up next. Hey, Zach, you are on the air. Go right ahead. Zach, you there?
Oh, Paul, I'm sorry. Hey, buddy.
That's quite all right.
I'd like to say that I don't think Rick Barnes is playing checkers at Tennessee, but Nate Oates is without a question a very great talent, and he's doing an outstanding job at Alabama. I'll give him that. Paul, everything's happened on Rocky Top this week, and it's been a lot. And a lot of it not good, and we still don't know how bad it could be yet. But I may be in the minority, Paul, but could I say that I personally appreciate the leadership of Chancellor Plowman. She jumped out in front with COVID restrictions on campus and stood firm with that, and they've done a good job with that. And now, with her and President Randy Boyd, who we love, seems like they've got it going at least at the first step in the right direction with Mr. White. But, Paul, my question to you, especially as a Tennessee alum, what has this and possibly what else could come out, how will this affect the legacy of Philip Fulmer?
Zach, it's a great question, and I'm going to give you an interesting answer. And what you can't do is look at it today and think you have the answer. You have to take a deep breath and pull the camera back. And I don't know when we will formulate or cement Coach Fulmer's legacy overall in the history books, but I am going to say, having seen this before, it will be what this week will be a blip on his legacy. I don't think it's going to seriously impact it.
Wow.
Because, you know, not only was he a player and a great football coach, I think he will be appreciated for the contribution when this storm moves on. I've watched this a couple of times already this year in the case of Pat Dye and John Majors. Neither one left their school in a great moment. Both were remembered as great leaders and champions. And I believe that whenever that day comes that we start talking about Philip Fulmer in the past tense, the same will be said about him.
Well, that's interesting. I don't hardly believe I'd go that far in my personal aspect, because talking to a lot of people, it just seems like as more time goes on, Philip Fulmer's reputation takes it, and these allegations could turn out to be better than we think.
Well, I think the thing with Coach Fulmer, and I've never, you know, I've tried to, I tried fairly desperately, by the way, a couple of years ago, I can now say, to get Coach Majors and Coach Fulmer together to do a documentary, because I really felt, as someone who loved Coach Majors as a student, that it would really be a nice way to put all this to bed. And I think all of you know the answer that they wouldn't do it. Neither one would hear of it. And I don't think Fulmer will go down in the same way as Coach Majors for a specific reason. Even though he accomplished more as a coach, Majors is even now, 65 years later, is still revered as a player. And you know, Fulmer was a good player, but nobody was Johnny Majors. I mean, he's one of the two or three greatest football players in Tennessee history. So I think that's an issue. But I still don't think this week is going to besmirch Fulmer's reputation. I may be naive on this, although I don't think I am, having lived a little bit longer than many and have written and broadcast about great people who had bad endings. We'll take a break. Speaking about someone who is hoping for a great beginning is our next guest. He's the new coach at Auburn, Brian Harsin. We will talk to him coming up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back, and it's great to have everyone here on a Friday afternoon, and we are particularly excited to welcome our next guest to the program. He is the new Auburn head football coach, Coach Brian Harsin, who comes to the Plains from Boise. And Coach, thank you very much for making time. I know this is a particularly busy time with recruiting and putting your staff together. Good afternoon and congratulations.
Well, thanks, Paul. War Eagle, excited to be here. And yeah, we have the staff working away and just looking forward to getting started.
I know you've been over a lot of this already in your introductory press conference and subsequent interviews, but you were doing quite well out at Boise, where you had been a number of years, not only as the head coach, but as an assistant. This may be an easy question to answer now that you've already started with War Eagle, but what attracted you to the Auburn job?
Well, I think number one, it's Auburn, and a chance to, you know, to play in this conference, to be at a place that's had the success of playing for a national championship, and the opportunity to, you know, to be in the best conference and in a place like this. You know, I think any competitor gets excited about that. And then as I got to know more of the people, a part of Auburn, that's what excited me and my family. I think just the family atmosphere, the culture, the pride, and ultimately, it always comes down to people. And I think that was for Kes and I and my family, the number one thing, number one factor. And so ever since we've been here, we felt that, and it's been a great experience so far, and just looking forward to the future and the things that we're able to do moving forward.
I say this as someone who used to live and lived in Alabama for a long time. It's different, to say the least, than living literally on the other side of the country. But as you have, and it's still early, Coach, but as you begin to make the transition, how are you adapting to a completely different culture and way of life?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I've heard a lot about it, and certainly, like I said, just living in Alabama and being a part of this university, the pride, that's enjoyable for me. I think that's something that my family and I have really embraced. But as far as being on this side of the country, the staff that we put together, we have SEC ties on the staff. We have coaches that have been a part of this and people in this facility that have been a part of this conference for a long time. And so I think just educating yourself, getting to know the history and tradition of Auburn, and certainly the people. And I think that's what it comes down to. It's still about people. It's about the excitement, the opportunity that we have in front of us. We have staff and coaches that have been a part of this before. And so bringing that together and focusing on what we have to do moving forward, to me, that's been where I've spent my time and where my focus has been and certainly will continue to be, all right, as we get started.
Coach Harsin, in putting a staff together, you've been there before. You were the head coach at Arkansas State, obviously many, many years in Boise. Did you follow a familiar template, or did you realize that you needed to fill the staff up with at least a few people that knew the recruiting trails?
Well, that was part of it. I started with the people that I wanted to surround myself with. And you go to Coach Bobo, he and I knew each other back in 2011 when I was at Texas, and he came and we did some professional development at that time. Coach Mason, I followed him when he was at Stanford. And matter of fact, at that time at Boise State, we had taken a lot of things from what he had done at Stanford as a defensive coordinator. And then some coaches that have been on my staff at Boise State that I felt had done a tremendous job. So that was really, you know, a big part of putting this together was surrounding yourself with great people. And then we have coaches that have been a part of this program as players. Zach Etheridge, Cadillac Williams, Tracy Rocker. And when those guys get in front of the team and get a chance to share their experience, you feel the pride of what it means to be an Auburn man and to be a part of this program. And so, you know, as we put the staff together, that was a big part, was the people that we were going to surround ourselves with. Yes, having some of those connections, and certainly those former players that are on this staff right now, they bring that to the team, that experience. But all great coaches, all coaches that want to learn, grow, and develop, and are here for the same reasons. We want to put ourselves in a position to be as successful as we can be, and they all want to be here and be a part of Auburn football.
You grew up in Boise. You played football there. You spent so much time there. And I bring that up because a lot of folks in this part of the country have heard of Boise, but I'm not sure they understand how fervent the fan passion is out there. And you've been to Texas. Obviously, it's hard to find a fan base like that. But how would you describe not only playing at Boise, but coaching at Boise to the rest of us who primarily know the SEC?
Sure. Well, tremendous pride. Being a player there, having that opportunity really helped me develop into the person that I am today, and obviously the opportunity to coach there. I took tremendous pride in being a part of that. And Bronco Nation, the support that they gave to the program, the type of players, the type of coaches that I was able to work with, Dan Hawkins, Chris Peterson, and many other assistant coaches that I worked with during the time. It really is a brotherhood there, and you felt that not only being a part of that program and not only being a former player, but you know, with all the coaches, the community, and there was great support and is great support for Boise State. So, you know, much like Auburn, there's a lot of pride, and certainly the success from players and coaches that have been there and the expectations and the standards that the program had, that was a great thing to be a part of. And as a coach and as a player, those are places you want to be at. And now I feel those same things here. And certainly as we get here and start to establish a culture, that's a major factor in what we're trying to accomplish and what we want to get done here at Auburn. And our guys know that. We're working through that right now. Our coaches are preparing themselves to begin that with our players very shortly, and we're looking forward to that challenge. But creating that type of culture, atmosphere, and certainly what they've been able to do here now to take that and continue to work towards building that to another level and with the group that we have here.
Coach, as you built your staff and now dealing with your new team, you mentioned the word culture. What are you trying to impress upon, especially your players, in terms of the type of culture that you would like to have at Auburn?
Well, one's connection, certainly, and nothing more important than that right now. As we get to know the players with new staff, you know, right now the connection piece is huge. But then from there, hard work. That's going to be a key component to what we do. We have to work hard. We've got to do the work necessary to be successful. And then ultimately, as we do that, the things that it takes to continue that, to sustain success. And, you know, that comes back to your personal best each and every day. And so that's the goal every day, is to put ourselves in the position to do the things necessary to be successful. And to sustain that, we have to be consistent each and every day. That takes tremendous focus, takes tremendous effort, and certainly takes the hard work necessary to make that happen each and every day. And we want the current players here, we want the future players that are going to be a part of our program to understand that and the standards that we want to set for ourselves here at Auburn. And those are the things that we have to establish and that we have to continue to focus on and work on each and every day in order to build that culture properly and help take this program where we want to go.
Coach, I know you got a chance to watch the bowl game. There's only so much you can pick up from a game that's awkward at times with the way this season has gone. But what were your thoughts as you were watching that game in terms of how you were looking at the field and making evaluations?
Sure. Well, first of all, I got a chance to see practice, and really it was not so much about the football component as it was getting a chance to meet the players and do that a little bit during that time, and also let them finish the season they had started. So I got a chance to get in front of the team a couple times, and then at the bowl game to watch them, to go out there and be around them pregame, and then sit up and just watch them finish the season out. And for me, it was more about, with so much craziness that's happened this season with COVID and game cancellations and all the things that all the teams have had to deal with, it was more about just letting this team finish. And the coaching change is not easy, finishing in a bowl game against a good football team. That was really my focus, was just wanting these guys to finish strong, and knowing that after that game was over, we were going to get a chance now to put the staff in place, connect with these guys more, and then start to establish what it is that we want to do here at Auburn.
And ultimately, it's easy to throw questions at coaches at the onset about what to expect, but you and I both know what Auburn fans expect. This is not some place where you come in and say, we're just trying to get to a bowl game. Auburn fans expect championships. I'm assuming you embrace that culture.
Absolutely. That's part of the reason why I'm here. And I know the coaches and the players that chose to come to Auburn is for exactly that. The opportunity to put yourself in the biggest games and to play well and to succeed and to play for championships. And those expectations are what we have internally in this program. So that's not something that's put on us from the outside. That's something that we put on ourselves from the inside. And you know, if you're a competitor and you want a chance to be the best, then you have to do the things necessary in order to put yourself in that position. But that should always be the case. And to have the fans and the support and those expectations, that's really the direction we're all trying to head. So the way I look at it, that's our focus. That's our goal. Those are the things that we want to accomplish. Now we have to do the things necessary to make that happen. But those expectations and standards, that's why you come to a place like Auburn. That's why you want to be a part of the Auburn family. And that's why you want to coach and be a player in a program like this, so you have a chance to be the best.
Coach, finally, what does the next 6 to 8 weeks look like for you in terms of trying to get ready for spring and also dealing with all the things that come with a transition like this?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's three things. Number one is culture, that we continue to establish that, and we focus on that as coaches and as players and everybody involved in this program, recruiting. We want to bring in the best players, the best people into this program, and there's still a few areas on the coaching staff we have to finalize, but certainly with our student athletes we bring in, we want the very best. And then development. Right now we're in a developmental phase where we have a chance to now get in the weight room, condition, start putting in the systems that we're going to use so we're prepared for spring practice. So those three things are the focus for me. Those are the three things that our staff are going to focus on, and then our players obviously have to be a part of that, and we've got to bring this all together. And every single day, that's got to be what we do, and staying focused on those so we can build, improve, make the progress that we need moving forward. And then we'll see the football side of it once we get into spring, and then we'll get a chance to reevaluate from there, head into summer, and then into fall camp and ready for the season.
Coach, congratulations. Thanks for making time. I know it's a crazy time in your life, but we really enjoyed it and hope to see you again very soon.
All right, thanks, Paul. War Eagle.
You got it. Thanks, Coach Harsin from Auburn, joining us. And certainly ready to roll down on the plains. We appreciate him dropping by today. Much more to come on our program, and we will take a short break right after. Be back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back, and let's get to the calls. And Eugene is in Georgia. Hello, Eugene.
Paul, so nice to speak to you today. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Paul, I'm very saddened today by the death of one of my boyhood heroes, Hank Aaron. And I just appreciated the fact that you led off today's program by paying tribute to this man who faced so many hurdles in his life that he should never have had to face. Heck, it's hard enough coming up through the ranks to achieve a position as one of the greatest baseball players of all time, but he also had to fight racism. And I'd like to relate a story that touched my life early in when I was playing Little League Baseball. I had a Louisville Slugger, which I liked a whole lot, and I was a pretty good hitter on my team. And my Little League team was called the Braves, and my favorite team, even when it was in Milwaukee before they moved to Atlanta, was the Braves. And I knew all the players, Warren Spahn and Eddie Matthews and Hank Aaron and Joe Adcock and so many others. I had a favorite bat, and it was a Hank Aaron special, a Louisville Slugger. And I was having a pretty good year, and I broke that bat, unfortunately, and I wanted to get a replacement that was identical. And I went to my sporting goods store, and I took the barrel of the bat so that they could get the Louisville Slugger oval and the number that was burned into the barrel of the bat and get me in a replacement just like it. And the salesman said he could do that and that he would order the bat. I'd come back about a week later, and I did. And about a week later, that bat came in, and I went down to pick it up. I was very excited. And it had a Eddie Matthews signature on it, not a Hank Aaron signature. Now, I liked Eddie Matthews a whole lot, and both of them were Hall of Famers, you know. But I asked the guy, I said, you couldn't give me a Hank Aaron signature? And the man made a disparaging comment. And he said, well, this fella is somebody you really need to have his name on your bat. You don't need to have that other guy. And he used a pejorative. And I'll never forget that. And I didn't have a whole lot of money. I was mowing lawns, trying to make some money at the time. And so I bought that bat because it was the same weight, and it was supposed to be identical. And it was a pretty good bat, but you know something, Paul? Even though I liked Eddie Matthews a whole lot, that bat didn't have as many hits in it as that one bat did.
No, I mean, it is amazing. And you know, there are very few, we'll just leave it at baseball, but you know, in my youth and yours, I mean, there was Hank Aaron, you know, Willie Mays. You know, what's interesting about Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, Eugene, they were two of the greatest hitters of all time. They both came from the same state, and it is remarkable. They both grew up in under the worst possible conditions in the segregated South. We will take a break. Lots to do right ahead. And we'll talk about Hank Aaron a little bit later, about a reporter who covered his baseball home run race. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.